Pada skala global, nilai startup atau syarikat pemula niaga ini mencecah $3 trillion, setara dengan keluaran dalam negara kasar ekonomi negara-negara kumpulan G7. Tambahan pula, Malaysia mendapat skor 10 dari segi prestasi dan juga jangkauan pasaran dalam Global Startup Ecosystem Report 2020. Itu apa yang dikatakan oleh pihak kerajaan sebelum ini. Bagi mengulas lanjut, saya nak bersama dengan tetamu saya pada jam ini di studio, Aaron Sharma, pengasas bersama Scale Up Malaysia. Aaron, thank you so much. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us. Finally, we got to meet face to face.
Face to face.
Yes,
with SOPs.
After 2 years, yeah. With the new SOP, of course. But Aaron, let's focus on the startup. This is very popular topic, I would say. But I want to know the overall, because we expect 2021 should be a recovery year, right? But it is a tough year as well for SMEs, for startup in Malaysia. But how do you foresee the overview? How do you see the overview for 2021, especially for startup?
So I think that's absolutely right. Like, a lot of startups thought 2021 was the recovery year after 2020, full year of pandemic. But as it seems, it's extended much longer, and a lot of people had to figure out how to adapt to the new normal, right? And the new reality of being able to adapt. So it's a mixed bag. Some startups actually took it very badly, weren't able to adapt. But the entrepreneurs who are resilient, who understood that they need to pivot their businesses in a more long-term way, found ways to build sustainable businesses. And we're seeing that actually right now, that there are actually success stories out of the last year. We've had companies that were acquired, such as Fave was acquired by Pine Labs. In our portfolio, ATX was our platform that we had. They do fintech solutions for mom and pop stores. They were acquired by an Australian listed company called Novati. So we're seeing that there is a lot of traction, and a lot of people are actually building these large businesses within Malaysia. And those who figured out how to do it have been able to persevere, even though 2022 was a kind of a rough year. So we're actually very excited about 2022 because we think there's a huge opportunity for these startups to grow even faster after the lessons of 2021.
Yeah, we also saw that government roll out incentives and support for digital economy in form of My Digital, for instance, and also we've seen Dana Penjana and the newly formed Meranti, for instance, which is the combination of TPM and also Magic. But do you think that the government is doing enough to support local startup ecosystem?
So I think I'll say that the government's doing a lot. But of course, there's a lot more they can do. But ultimately, in the long run, the government should do a lot now so that in the long run, they can do less and allow the private sector to take over and actually run the startup ecosystem. The government's a great catalyst. And I think I'm really excited with the things you marked off just now. Penjana Capital, I think, has been very influential in the ecosystem. Our company is actually meeting with the funds in Penjana Capital, and I think they've invested in about 30 companies so far. Meranti is also something that we talked about actually on this program last year, where we're saying there's so many agencies regarding startups, there needs to be some sort of, like, you know, kind of consolidation or synchronization of these agencies. And Meranti, being the merger of TPM and Magic, I think is a step in the right direction, focusing on 4IR and future tech, right? And then with My Digital, provided an overall framework, which I think is very exciting, especially since now we have a larger framework. Even though I feel, and I said it at the time, that maybe it should be a little bit more ambitious, but at least we have a framework now and we're all kind of working towards it. And I think the guys at My Digital are really pushing hard to kind of roll out all the incentives, like the 5,000 startups, the 5 unicorns. I think really exciting to see that these things are done. But in the long run, I think we should go to a point where the private sector starts doing a lot more of these things, and why organizations like Scale Up exist, because we're here to kind of help kind of grow the ecosystem together using private sector capital and know-how.
We want to recover after the pandemic, after 2 years of, you know, painful time frame, I would say. But how do you see that the startup ecosystem important in terms of national recovery?
So I think the startup ecosystem plays a huge role in this recovery process. And primarily because of the disruption we saw over the last 2 years. A lot of old business models had to change. And this was the opportunity for startups to adapt what they have and implement new models for the new economy, right? And so I believe that the startups were actually critical to a lot of the success over the last couple of years. And startups do a few things, right? Firstly, they innovate, bring in new technologies, new ideas, new models, and make them more mainstream. The second thing they do is they bring in new talent. New capacities are needed, new knowledge is needed. People who know new skills, like 4IR skills, AI, and these are things that can be implemented in the economy. And finally, there's jobs. And a good example is how Grab 10 years ago was a startup too.
Yeah.
Yeah. They raised 150,000 ringgit from Cradle Fund as a grant initiative from the government, by the way. And now they employ thousands of people in Malaysia and around the region. Yeah. And that shows how a startup, even though they start off as something really small, maybe a bit of a risk, but in the long run creates jobs for the economy that didn't exist before this. And so I think that's a huge opportunity with startups.
Yeah.
And if we can help these startups now, in 10 years, how many grabs could we create and how many more jobs can we create with that?
We don't want to just create startup. We want them to be resilient.
Exactly.
We don't want after the 5 years they're gone off the market, right? But do you think that Malaysia has the capacity to build or to come up with, to produce more startups, which is world-class startup?
So I would say yes. I guess this is the industry I'm in. So obviously we're believers in this. And we've done it in the past, right? I think we've got people like Eric Cheng from Carsum, first Malaysian unicorn. And just in the last week, they announced a $300 million raise.
Yeah.
Really exciting to see a Malaysian company going regional, building a large company. Famously, AirAsia is also a Malaysian company that went regional. Grab also is an example of Malaysian companies that have gone regional. We've got companies in our portfolio who in the pandemic actually were able to grow, not just in Malaysia, but across the region to Hong Kong, to the Philippines, to Indonesia. And so we're seeing that Malaysian entrepreneurs are very resilient, very smart, very creative. And I think they can be world-class with the right support.
Yeah, of course, there are room for improvements, especially for founders, and there's challenges for them. What are the challenges do you foresee, or do you think they face, you know, to become world-class startups?
So I think three main things come to mind. Firstly, I think Malaysian entrepreneurs need to have a regional mindset from day one. We have this Malaysian problem where we say we will be jago kampung first, and then we'll go and think about doing regional expansion. Mm. But you don't hear this from a lot of other ASEAN founders or even founders of other parts of the world. Singaporean founders famously would think of going regional from day one. And I think Malaysian founders need to think this way because that's where the real opportunity is. Malaysia, as it is a decent-sized market. I call it like the reverse Goldilocks. It's just a nice size for you to build a business, but you can't build a really large business. So I think if an entrepreneur in Malaysia thinks, I'm going to go regional from day one and structure their business that way from day one, they have a huge chance to be successful.
Yeah.
The other thing that I think we have is talent, right? We need to be able to attract the right kind of talent to the market to build these companies because startups are technology initiatives. So you can't just have a business person. You need to have people who knows how to code, knows AI, knows the latest ways to develop products. And I think that's important as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you look at the other countries, United States, Japan, and other advanced countries, MNCs, for instance, they're pretty much involved in startup development and all that. But in Malaysia, because when we talk about them going abroad, going regional, international, globally and all that, we need to invest in them, right? But how do you see the institutional investors in Malaysia? Are they keen into looking to support our startup to go regional and all that by investing in them?
So it's like, you know, when you go to a pool and you want to go swim, right? Our institutional investors feel a little bit like they're just testing the waters, right? A little bit wet, but never really diving in. I think the opportunity here is for corporate Malaysia to really get involved in the startup ecosystem because as I think you were also mentioning, a key issue with our founders is access to capital, right?
Yes.
And I think corporate Malaysia can play this role. But beyond capital, corporates also bring knowledge transfer. They also have go-to-market, existing distribution channels. And I think this is important for a startup.
Mm-hmm.
And what you see all over the world is that corporations are seeing startups as a way for them to acquire new talent, to find new business models and new lines of revenue. And this is really what is important for Malaysian corporates to realise, is that the startups are the pathway out. And the trick is not to try to build it yourself. Mm-hmm. The trick is to work with industry players like VCs and people like us, accelerators, to kind of find the companies that can work for you and work with you and find that new opportunity for your business.
Yeah. Since the pandemic in Malaysia, we talk about upskilling and reskilling for our workers who got retrenched and all that. And then we ask them to, you know, start business and all that without any knowledge or, you know. But how do you see the skills in Malaysia? And what kind of things that need to be improved in terms of, you know, getting all these youth and retrenched people to do business and to do startups and all that?
Yeah, so I think number one, we need to have better digital education for kids in schools.
Mm.
Our regional neighbours are all learning coding at a very young age. And in Malaysia, it's not really happening where kids in primary schools and secondary school are learning coding.
Yeah.
And I would argue that it's actually more important to learn a coding language than a actually a speaking language.
Yeah.
Because in the future, it's all about people who can talk to computers and talk to technology. I think that's really important that we build that. And then in the workforce, we need to focus more on upskilling and reskilling. I think the other threat that we have is that Malaysian talent now, because of the pandemic, is serving companies outside of Malaysia too. Because now the guy can sit in Mentakap, wear his sarong, have his teh tarik, and get paid in US dollars. Why would he ever join a local startup? So we got to think of how we can attract these guys to actually work for Malaysian companies, and which would mean Malaysian companies need to afford and pay more money for high-quality talent. Otherwise, they're just going to sit in Malaysia and work elsewhere.
Yeah. You mentioned a lot about talent just now.
Hmm.
But do you think that Malaysia has enough talent in terms of building up new startups and create more creative startups, I would say?
Yeah, I think we've got a lot of interested business people. Like, half the guys I meet out there are guys who are, you know, they're marketing guys or they're business guys or guys with ideas. We don't see enough coders or people who know how to create products, right? And what happens is a lot of Malaysian founders tend to outsource to developers in India or in Vietnam or in the Ukraine or something like that to develop technology. So we need to develop internal coding capacity in Malaysia. Every startup I meet says, oh, I'm looking for developers. So it's clear that we don't have enough, even though we've got a lot of people who graduate computer science degrees. So there's a disconnect a bit, right? People are graduating computer science degrees, but for some reason, they're not entering the workforce and actually coding and developing product. It's not just for startups. When I was working with AirAsia for a while, we were hiring developers as well. Mm-hmm. We couldn't find developers in Malaysia, so we had to go and set up an office in Bangalore to do it. So I think that's an issue that we have to fix.
But if we could compare Malaysia with neighbouring countries, especially Singapore or Indonesia, how do you see, where are we in terms of our startups development and ecosystem?
So I think Malaysia's always been regarded as one of the up-and-coming startup ecosystems in ASEAN and even on the world. You mentioned a stat just now about how there was a startup report that said we are, you know, on the up-and-coming list as well. I think we should be very happy with that. Mm-hmm. I think we could be much further, actually. Mm. Because I think Malaysia is situated in a great location in ASEAN. We've got this melting pot of cultures, which makes our founders very open to different kind of business models and kind of adoption of their technologies. Our guys are very resilient, good entrepreneurial spirit. Mm-hmm. But I think what holds us back is this regional mindset and this desire to kind of build these large companies early on. Also, access to capital is, I think, an issue as well. Yeah.